Bourbon and Brown Town is an affiliate podcast of Soapbox Production and Organizing that pairs critical analyses of media, culture, politics, and everyday happenings with the tastiest of spirits. With the occasional help of Chicago's most talented and creative artists, activists, filmmakers, academics, and social entrepreneurs, Brown Town unpacks current events, social issues, and gives personal insight into various topics.
Soapbox is a film and social activism nonprofit that specializes in multimedia curation of creative projects centered around education, entertainment, and structural social change for a more equitable and creative world. So for this episode, sit back, sip something good, and enjoy.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Bourbon and Brown Town. I'm out here with your boy Colin in Brown Town. Colin, how you doing?
I'm feeling so excellent right now.
That's awesome.
With good people.
Good people.
Talking about good things.
Good things.
I'm feeling good. It's been a good day. Didn't get a lot of sleep, but I took a nap earlier, which is amazing.
I mean, you never sleep.
To reallocate sleep I did get overnight. The snap was excellent. But I'm feeling good, to answer your question. How are you?
I'm doing better. We're doing better.
Yeah,
We're doing better every day. And we're out here with a good friend of ours. You've heard him before. You might have seen him. Lerone, man, how you doing, Doug?
I'm doing great. Doing good, doing great. I am really, really feeling that earlier pour. That's why I'm only going to have one. But really it was amazing, though. It was absolutely amazing.
I like to be generous.
You know? Thank you. Thank you.
Hey. If you all don't know, Lerone was on episode 8.1, 8.3, talking about toxic masculinity, sexism, feminism. All the isms around gender and what that means, which is very excellent.
Yeah.
Lerone, tell us a little about yourself and then tell us about what you've been doing since that recording. That was back in August.
Oh, damn. Almost a year. Yeah.
Well, contrary to some Chicago hip hop artists' beliefs, I'm still black. and that was not by choice, much like their opinions on certain forms of work. No, since then though, man, I know every chance I get, I just like to highlight that shit. It's just dumb fuckery. But I haven't really been doing anything mad crazy since the last time we talked. The biggest thing I think is still working with my good friend and co-host Jamie for Elevated Podcast. Really just situating myself to kind of take strides towards I don't want to say doing what I want to do, but developing a revenue stream where I serve people by doing what I love. And
it's hard.
Exactly.
I've been trying right for now. 3 years.
It's worth pursuing, but not easy. That's the thing. Like if pursuit was lucrative, then we'd all be some billionaire MS, right? But that's really been it. And of course, apropos to what we're going to talk about. Been raising a beautiful 3-year-old or co-parenting with a beautiful 3-year-old.
She is the cutest being on this earth.
Thank you so much.
But I don't know how you end up with her, but
I don't either. That's all her mom. Like, she's gonna be tall. So
it's all her mom.
But she's like the smarts and the beauty and the grace. That's all mom's genes. Dad, I'm gonna give her a height and maybe an overbite. Slight chance of an overbite from my daughter.
Or some of the dome, dude. Come on, let's go there. So we are here. Father's Day is, here with us. And so we, as we did in a previous episode, if y'all didn't check that out for Mother's Day, shout out to Jamie. She was so dope. She was like, I'm not Jamie's doing so. Let's hang dope. Out. What's good? What you on? Like, you want to hang out? You got a baby. Let's do it. And it was absolutely wonderful. And so Lerone, I'm actually so glad that you're here just hanging out with us and vibing. And like, give us a little bit more info on, like when that podcast is out and like when people got to be ready for it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. I think this is May, right? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, the dates are just running into each other.
Oh man, I wish that was the case.
When we get to parent, I was gonna tell you, when we start talking about parenting, you'll understand why. But this is May. I believe we have a soft target for the end of May. We're doing with Elevated Podcast, man, we are simply two folks from the Chicago and Chicagoland area. I was raised in Evanston, born on the South Side, and pretty much, like, I don't say a lot of people, but like some folks, was moved around with my family, and then my family settled in Evanston. We're called the Elevated Podcast because, as a lot of people realize, the Red Line within Chicago Transit takes you all the way from North and Howard Station. It can take you all the way down south to 95th. In that passage,
that's great.
The keen observer will notice a change geographically and culturally. But also when you people watch, you sometimes get a good cross-section of the representation that is Chicago, the multi-layered representation that is Chicago, from even just the outfits are one thing, you know, how people dress, to what people are talking about, to how they explain the same things. You know, it's really a great thing to do. As a kid, I would do it a lot. You know, my uncle or my dad would come pick me up, go and, you know, and just have those moments. So what we're trying to do with the podcast is relay that kind of, not kind of, but honestly, ultimate unity to talk about not just Chicago, but the Chicago area. So the biggest thing is that I always say, I absolutely realize that, one, I'm not from Chicago. I don't even try and pretend, because I have love for Chicago and respect for it. And I know way too many people from where I'm from that if I look at their pages, they're like lifelong Chicagoan. I'm like, bro, you know. You moved when you were 22. After
you were
college.
In Naperville.
Exactly. You were in Naperville.
You were 20. And no.
It's like even worse, you come from that great old fabled Chicago community, Lake Forest, Illinois, where if you let people from Lake Forest tell you, they're like three blocks away from the west side. But, yeah, it's like, just come on. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. So it's like, I just want to show that there's a way to give Chicago love and respect while not, you know, here's the $7 word, appropriating all the things that make Chicagoans so unique and so wonderful. So, yeah, I'm just a suburban dude really trying to take from Felonious, stop it, B. Like, I'm really trying to get people from the outlying areas to be like, no, love Chicago, but don't act like you're there. Like, love it and respect it. Respect it. Respect it.
Your tax dollars aren't going to the same shit, so.
They're reallocated. Place you don't want them to.
Exactly. It's so real, though.
Hashtag 12.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. No, but, like, and I'm like, I'm... It's nice, like, to hear that, you know, I suppose that like being from a suburb or having like been in a suburb, you know, for X period of time. Like, you know, I went to high school in Berwyn, which is, you know, just on the west side. And so it's like, I think, you know, everyone has their own like stories as to like where they belong, right. Or they feel they belong in the city. You know, like when people ask me that, I actually don't tell them. I'm like, oh, I'm from Berwyn, because I'm not. And like from what I'm at, it's like, you know, personally, like, it's Pilsen, but I also, like, I'm not Pilsen. Because, you know, I didn't go to school there, I feel like,
yeah.
I can't, or I mean, I did, but like, I like not as an, like a teen where I like, yeah, could develop my own consciousness of my surroundings. And so apparently when I claim and say, oh, I'm, you know, west side Chicago, you know, literally west, like when we just progressed and moved west, and I've been in the city for the last, you know, whatever, how amount of time. But how has that been growing your baby girl?
I think that, I always say this. So the story of my daughter coming to Earth from whatever plane she existed, in between just the
so
transit time.
To
well, I mean, just I the mean, transit time. Yeah, between, you know, manifesting inside of her wonderful mom, her mom's womb, and then really kind of collecting whatever stories she's going to have for ancestors when she relays them to me. I'm starting to get those stories now. It's kind of like I see which of my elders that have passed on and which of the elders that have passed on for her mom that she was talking to. And it's interesting, because a lot of people say that about babies, where, yeah, I'm one of the believers. I do feel that children have a deeper connection to the spiritual world. And it, over time, it's lost because, you know, yeah, we are in the material.
We
right?
socialize them.
Exactly. We socialize them to think that, you know, oh, those are just dreams, or those are just like little nuances. And it's like, well, there is something there that your child who hasn't been on this earth for more than 5 years walks like your favorite grandmother, or walks like your, you know, talks like, or does this thing like a person that was significant in your life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm noticing now. To start though, post-conception, to start with my daughter, well, it's, you know, family show, right? Hey. But absolutely, that was so bad. That was so bad. That was so bad.
I mean, if
he was on a good run, he just went to shit, just like a man. No, so I'll say it like this: I was actually someone who I always shout out is her name is Arena Ali. She's an amazing artist from Chicago. She and I were taking a trip to help some folks out. And so we were out of town. And in this time, I had explained to Brielle's mom, to Bribri's mom, like, hey, I'm going to go real fast, but I'm going to come back. We kind of made a deal the last trimester. We both just be in the same space or the same area. And I was like, well, let me just do this. It's only going to take 2 days. I get down there. And I get a call the next morning like, hey, not to alarm you, but I'm kind of going into labor. So, exactly, right? Now, I'm like more than like 3 or 4 hours away at this time.
And you're doing what now? I'm
sorry. This was, we were just delivering supplies.
Chilling.
We were just watching.
Stupid.
Yeah, exactly. We were just delivering supplies out of state.
You were working, doing volunteer
work, you know. Copy. So, delivering supplies out of state, right? And I get a call, and it's like, hey, not to alarm you, but I'm going into labor.
Every time, a life being is coming out of me.
So you remember that bun? Yeah, that bun is full on ready. But I'm like, oh, okay. So this is why, like, I talk to her maybe, her being Zarina, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, but immediately tell her, like, if there's everything you want. Because I turn to Zarina, I'm like, hey, so my daughter's about to be born. Before I could finish, I know we have some stuff to do. She was like, shut up. Let's get in the car. We're going back. Like, no questions asked. Drove me all the way back. So she deserves a shout out. Also, because of that, look for her amazing series, her amazing series. It's called Sex is a God Thing.
Sex is a God Thing.
And it speaks upon and displays love. I'm going to tell you love, but it's also the way in which I see people really responding to, I would say, queer love or gaining a higher understanding of what it means to have queer love appreciation. I always start out with love because no one has a right to tell you how you should love. As long as it's consensual and it's understood between those beings, whether it's two or more or whatever. Right. And that's what Zarina is doing with her work and her piece. So that's my shameless plug because I appreciate it so much. I hope I did that right. If it gets back to Zarina and I screwed it up, she'll tell me. But
look, she'll hit us up. She'll be like, exactly. Can you please delete this? I'm like,
not,
what?
She will not miss words.
We can't.
But that being said, so drives me back, drops me off. I dash to the hospital and like I wait. So now during the entire pregnancy, I was just doing all the scary dad stuff, you know, thinking like, am I going to be good enough? I'm already a black person. How am I going to be a black father? And anybody looking at the statistics and just the perception of black fathers, it's like, it's slim pickings as far as what positivity there is out there. But it also depends on your environment. So I'm having that go through my mind for 7, 8, 9 months, right?
During these 7, 8, 9 months, I want to interrupt you.
No.
What is your relationship like with, I forgot her name, so I apologize, but with the mother?
Like, with Brielle, so yeah, exactly. So I didn't want to say my daughter's name, but I kind of put that out there. Yeah, exactly. It's quite all right. It's quite all right because people know it's quite all right. So with Bri's understanding with her mom and I, we co-parent. At that time, we were attempting to solidify a relationship with each other. That would manifest into a partnership, right? So that being said, we were like where we are now on amazing terms and you know, really much respecting and loving each other. And that was the one thing that I think sometimes threw people off. To be honest, there were folks always like, well, aren't you two going to get married? Isn't that the next step? You're going to get married.
Yeah.
I'm not a traditionalist in that way. And again, going back to like the rigors of like socializing what we call responsibility parenting, what we call male responsibility for parenting, it was expected that I would just marry
yeah.
you know, my daughter's mom because that's what you do. You don't like, it's not a shotgun and I had friends like, oh, we ain't gonna make her an honest woman. And my reply would always be, she's already an honest woman.
Yeah.
Mm. But
yes.
But
yes.
Here's the thing, like,
what the fuck with you?
That doesn't excuse though. That doesn't excuse that it was not a desire to be a parent and not be married. Mm. You know, and that's the thing that I always want to be clear on is that my failure in communication was, you know, if this were to happen, you know, and we would not end in together, would that be okay? Now, that being said, we still have a great relationship. We continue to talk. We speak about our daughter. We speak about just the environments that she's in, whether it's my environment or whether it's her mother's environment. And those communication lines are open. Like with anything, sometimes things get mixed up. Sometimes, you know, things are just unsaid. But we work very hard, and I think we do a great job of really relaying the important information about our daughter and still check in on each other's lives. Like, hey, how are you?
You good?
You know, and because I think that's something that does get mixed up, because we can go into that a little bit later. But so that's how that was. You know, our relationship, you know, we were in a relationship, and it just at that point, we were focused more on being great parents, you know, to our daughter. So our daughter is born. That was, I mean, you know, people, I'm going to do, even talking about Father's Day, I'm going to do my best not to center her mother's strength around womanhood or like individuality and strength and personhood around becoming a mother. Like, she's already a strong person beforehand. Right. That being said, there's nothing like an unassisted birth. And what I mean by that is that there's no anesthesia. There was nothing. They had no epidural. And she had a natural childbirth,
and the choice was,
and that was
for the betterment of
right, the birth, right. It was just what, you know, what she wanted. Yeah, you know, yeah. I had a doula.
I don't know what that is.
Doula. So a doula
for some of us who do.
You know what? All right. So I want to get this
not
right.
David and I, just the listeners, not us at all.
Oh, you guys got it. You guys
definitely know it.
So I'm gonna read like the direct translation definition. A woman who is trained to assist another woman during childbirth and who may provide support to the family after the baby is born.
So that's what y'all had.
And we had a doula. Fortunately for me, it was a friend of mine. We know each other loosely in high school, but how the world works is when I moved back to Chicago, met up with those friends again. And we all started talking. And I was like, hey, by the way, you know, I'm going to be a parent soon. You're a doula, right? And you're like, yeah, like, duh. Like, let's do this. So she was with us every step of the exit. It was. And that's, again, where tradition comes into, like, not so much new age, because doulas aren't new age. But tradition was, culturally speaking, the mothers preceding the current mother's generation will help with the baby. So there was a mixed communication. There were some mixed feelings about having a doula. Yet our daughter's grandma on her mom's side was like, the fuck is this? Like, I'm here. Like,
who is
exactly? It was like, Harpo, who this man? No, for
who
real?
This bitch.
No. But
I was thinking that I was gonna say.
You just told him, hey, listen to this podcast. It was something.
Yeah, it was interesting. But to get to the point where the labor was intense and interesting, because Bree's mom basically drove herself to the hospital. Like, at this time, I'm being driven back up north. Drove herself to the hospital, checked herself in, and was like sending me text messages like, hey, okay, I'm okay, but nothing's happening. Hour and a half later, oh, I'm okay, nothing's happening. 10 minutes later, I'm okay, nothing's happening. So by the time I get there, true to life, nothing happened. You know, I'm like, okay, so what's going on? So the doctor's like, well, you know what? Although the sac that carries the amniotic fluid and, of course, the child, ripped a bit, it wasn't a full-on tear. So the nurse was like, well, here's what we can do. We can assist the tear. You may feel a little discomfort, but if we do that, exactly, right? And this was after, like, everybody was there for about 2 hours. And, of course, his mom was there for about 3 hours before that. So it's already around 5-6 hours, maybe.
Yeah.
So the doctor says that, and we're like, all right, well, let's go into, let's try it out. Let's do it. Because, like I said, it was already agreed there was going to be no epidural or anything like that. So the doctor comes.
Do you guys
in.
Sign a waiver for that shit, or like?
No, you tell them. You tell them.
Like, I mean, I don't know.
It's
like,
cool.
For, like my mom right. was like, my mom was all C-section.
Exactly. It's at, my mom was C-section as well, and
Colin,
so
your mom was like,
I have no idea. I don't think so. I think I was Gucci.
Okay. So,
but did you take like a epidural?
Just sorry. Questions asked.
There you go.
Questions asked. Maybe not like.
Shout out to Colin's mom, though.
Yeah, shout out. Yeah, exactly. Shout out to Mama Hudson.
Oh, man.
So, but yeah, so it's like, she said, okay, fine, let's do that. Because we're all like, are you? Because she would say, well, I'm not really in pain. You know, I'm a little discomfort. And I'm like, okay. So the doctors perform, not surgery, they perform that. And I mean, like an hour later, I saw a look in my daughter's mom's eyes that has haunted me ever since then. Like, everybody makes the jokes, you know, the movie's always like, oh, you did this to me, and the woman's just, you know, sweating. Exactly. And it's like, it's nothing like that. However, as like the male-bodied person, like, like, I didn't do any, like, oh my God. It's like, oh, shit is about to get real. And she gave me the look like, yes, shit is about to get real, because one of us couldn't count the vinegar strokes. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, I'm so stupid. Oh my God. I'm so sorry for what's about to happen to you. I'm so sorry. But I mean, within the time the doctors, like, successfully broke, I always say this side, but they successfully broke, that next hour, it was essentially watching, for me, it was watching in the physical form why it is absolutely ridiculous to think that patriarchy exists because men are simply dominant, and to understand why, like, a lot of guys unfortunately go, well, I didn't know about being responsible for a woman until I became a father, because that's bullshit. But I get it, and the reason I get it is because to watch your child being born and to see what it means to have life created, it does change you. You know, I was very nervous, like earlier, like what was going on those months between, you know, her mother and I. We were talking. I'm just nervous. I don't want to F it up. I don't want to get it wrong. Fast forward to, like, she's coming out, and it's like, okay, I am absolutely helpless yet required to assist. You know what I mean? So for me, it was like, responsibility is a big thing, but that responsibility was more than just, you know, physically show up.
Yeah.
And from that point on, like, my daughter, when she was born, she was here, you know, they were cleaning her up. She looked at me, and I was just trying to talk to her, say hello, and start the bonding process. But yeah, you know, just definitely let out tears of joy. Her mother got to hold her, and just got to just really develop and love and see exactly what it all takes. And I will say, like, from that point on, I don't think that I've considered anything more important than my daughter. And I really say I don't think, because you have moments in life where you're like, well, I have to make this choice, I have to make that choice. But the truth is, any choice that I've made after my daughter's birth has been really, how is it going to affect her? How is it going to affect the relationship I have with her mother? And then how is it going to affect me?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it was still trials and, like, just trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's the birthing part. And again, thank you so much to Zarina, because, yeah, she was just like, nah, fuck that. You're going to see your daughter. She just drove back on a whim. And I'm always eternally grateful for her for that. Or grateful to her for that.
No, but it's nuts. And, like, so, you know, this isn't a Mother's Day episode, but, like, you know,
well, no, I just like,
there's always two parts to a story, right?
Yeah. And I just got to be like that. To me, it's like, I'm not a father outside of, I guess, if I were to adopt, you know, but I'm not a father without her mother.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as a thing, like, being a father biologically, yes, but being a parent is an entirely different thing. But yes, it's for me, you know, like, I don't fuck around when I say I'm a feminist, and I don't fuck around when I say I'm a womanist. And again, it's not to only identify a woman's strength and presence through childbirth and through motherhood, because that's a backdoor way into toxic masculinity. So you think that a woman's worth is only in service to creating a child for your benefit. Right. You know, it's like, and I'm not really with that shit. Childbirth is a, it is a marvel. It is fucking amazing. I hate to curse right there, excuse me, but it is amazing. It is amazing. I hope I didn't kill the mood.
No, that's exactly what we need to hear. It's like, because, you know, for myself and Colin, like, we don't understand fatherhood just yet. You feel what I'm saying? Like, I hope to one day, you know, see something, you know, a spawn of mine, you know? But, like, other than that, it's like hearing these stories. And, like, and I'm sure, Colin, just as you, like, we've heard stories of, you know, whether it's, like, my own dad telling me about, like, you know, I was on some C-section shit. So, like, other than, like, they just had to cut me out because I was killing my ma. And he kind of was just like, yo, like, what the fuck? So I just chilled in the incubator. So he would just come see me every day for a couple hours after he got out of work. He did that for like 7 months. And that's his story behind my birth, you know. And then you got Omar, whose fat ass was like 10 pounds. So, like, that almost killed her.
His, like, younger brother.
This is like, you know, and then, like, Colin, like, I'm sure you have your stories of, you know, like, your brother or you. Or I don't know.
I mean, as far as, like, being born, I've seen myself being born. It was
You've tragic. Seen yourself?
Yeah.
It was, what? Dude, someone got this on footage?
You know, some of my parents, they showed me.
What? How? Who at the time? And then your dad was like, I'm about to get the angle real
home,
quick.
I know I was walking into it, and I saw it, and I was like, I don't want to see that ever again.
No, my question is, like, you're allowed to have a camera in the space?
Yeah, I have seen myself come out of my mother's body. It's nothing to go into after that.
We did not have a camera.
Like you have your story. Like, mine was not as traumatic as yours. I don't want to say traumatic. And I kind of know your whole. It's real. I don't really know that as much, but I do know because I was young. I was younger sibling. I'm a younger brother. But my other brother is 7 years older than I am. So I remember / have stories of, like, when I was younger, kind of growing up with him and everything.
Right.
And we had a great relationship, despite just being 7 years apart. But I know one thing was, like, he put water in my bed while I was sleeping to, like, as if I was peeing myself in the bed. And I never, ever did.
No, I'm kidding. No, we all did.
My mom, like, caught him and was like, hey, I know you fucking did that. Like, what are you doing? Got him in that. Guy's out of trouble.
Got him
in. Point being, my origin story, I don't really know as much, but I know my dad was in the waiting room with my mom. He was there. And, like, I live with my parents a lot. Like, and, like, you know that. I think you both know that. David, you've met my parents several times. And I do know, like, personality wise, I'm much more like my mom. Mm-hmm. We're more kind of outspoken. We kind of, like, social norms are, like, an optional for us, so to speak. Whereas my dad is amazing, amazing human being, a little bit more kind of just, not, I don't say stoic, but, like, you know, he's more professional all the time, or I'm not.
But your brother is.
And my brother is. My brother's taking a lot after my dad personality-wise. I think a lot after my mom personality-wise. But I think my brother and I have both learned from both of them in many different facets, professionally, personally, how we relate with loved ones, friends, all across the board. But you know, my relationship with my father is good. Like, my dad's awesome. He taught me a lot about just the world. And obviously, we don't have the same analysis on all things, but there's ways we can have honest conversations which are nuanced and special, and I really cherish those when they happen. So
yeah, no, and then sometimes it takes until, you know, like, you know, sometimes we wish we could have had these conversations when we're like 14. You feel what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like,
hey, your mom, no, you're right.
I see what's, but this goes back to you, Lerone, because you just finished a master's program at DePaul after your baby was born, right?
Yeah.
So tell me something. We talk about higher education, you know, like, a lot of us, you know, seniors in high school were encouraged, like, you know, apply somewhere, go to school. Cool. Right. You did that. You had it. Then your girl, whatever. And then you're like, you know what?
I'm going to do it again.
I want to go back to school. Like, what? And so, like, how has higher education in that point? Like, shout out to DePaul.
Right.
Like, the program that both of y'all did. But, like, realistically, how was that for you? Like, you're dealing with normal adult shit. You're dealing with baby, and then you're dealing work with school.
Yeah.
And a master's program. Fuck, like, it's not, like, I think undergrad is, like, I guess there's, I don't know.
Well, I think so. For me, undergrad, I was not a parent, right? Like you're saying, you know, Brielle was conceived, and I know I'm saying her name. Like I said, it's all right. because nobody's crazy stalkers. But Bri Bri was born, and I was entering. I was really confused about should I even go to grad school or not. And honestly, like, I think everyone in this room will kind of agree to this point. You sometimes look around at your situation and it's like, okay, it's not ideal or it's not the best for me, and there's something I want to do, but at least I'm getting paid. And at least I'm, you know, at least I got benefits, and my daughter will have vision and dental for.
Oh, you're adding another body to that.
I was thinking along that route, and I had a conversation. Again, this is after, like, I had this conversation with her mother, and this was after, you know, we decided that we could co-parent. We could co-parent better than we could try and exist in a relationship. And I said to her, you know, it was a conversation, and I think this was that step on up towards, like, it's not really about you making a decision on a whim. You know what I mean? The individual is not, I don't say no longer existent, but it's the group that matters. And specifically was, so if I go to grad school, I may not be able to work the way I'm working now. And this is what I can afford to pay as far as support. And just a quick shout out, there's no excuse, pay your child support. I hate that myth and that idea that motherfuckers actually are anti-financial support and think that I love my daughter and I show up for my daughter, but I also make sure that financial responsibilities are handled. The other part of that is with what's happening right now, like you said about grad school, that came to a close because as I started grad school, I could not work the job I was working. I actually failed one class. It was data analysis.
I remember that.
Dude. Yeah. Actually, I didn't just fail.
Late every day.
He didn't
late. Exactly. I didn't just fail. Like, I basically
learned nothing.
It wasn't that I didn't care, but it was the days that I was working, my schedule wouldn't allow me enough time. But I didn't want to quit the job because I enjoyed it, what I was doing. And once I failed that quarter, I was like, you know what? That was ridiculous on me. And I had thought about, like, I'm jeopardizing that for my daughter. Because I need to finish this on time and, like, have a tight turnaround.
So
you know?
Your decisions.
No, exactly.
It's not just you anymore.
It's not just me. So even what I thought was like, oh, I can be responsible and have this job and pay this stuff and all that. But in the long run, it was like, no, that was a decision to make. So again, went back to her mother and was like, I'm going to have to quit this job, but I'm going to look for another one in the meantime. And there was discussion like, well, are you sure this is what you want to do? And, you know, you have to be able to understand that puts more burden on me. That's what her mother was saying. It puts more burden on me. And, you know, I'm not okay with that. So I think, you know, I believe in a higher power. I don't, you know, I don't play around with it. I quit one job, like, immediately after I messed up that quarter. I quit that job. And less than 5 months later, I was hired at another job. I'm sorry, less than 5 weeks later. So by the time I got back into school, because I was over the summer, by the time school started again, I was working a job and the schedule for that job just was love. So that,
I get it.
Exactly. So after messing up that quarter, I realized I need to put myself on a schedule. And that's something I cannot do. Even to, like, I love my daughter, my daughter's on the schedule, and that's it. And I didn't realize, you know, if you put everything else on that same schedule, Lauren, your life might be okay. You might
still
be okay.
Figuring it out.
Exactly.
We all learning.
We all learning, man. Right? I just know Taco Tuesdays.
I mean, he literally hit me up today. He's like, wait, we're recording today.
Exactly.
Right? We're like, you're wrong.
Man, like, because I swear, I thought I put it in my calendar, and I looked at my calendar, like, kind of bare, kind of empty today. I don't think that's right. But no, so long story long, what it did when I was in grad school, co-parenting, and understanding the rigors of accountability and consistency, it really disciplined me into taking advantage of all of the minutes within an hour and all the hours within a day. You know, and I mean, we both
exactly. I don't get it. I'm trying, but he gets it.
There's a guy to, like, my right, camera left, that really, like, and people wonder, like, why do you talk about him so much? I'm like, y'all don't understand. To be where I am at 37 and to look at this guy, and I'm not gonna give you an age out, but at the age he is,
this guy's me. Okay,
exactly. It's like, not even this guy. Not. Yeah, that's. Oh my god, that's you. It's like, no, seriously. Like, your level of concentration and commitment to things, it only bears fruit, man. And I was like, you know what? I believe that you are the type of person that you surround with. So I was like, let me talk to this dude. And that's something that always helped me out. Like, it's, again, like, I don't ever blow smoke. That's why I say, man, I appreciate you so much. Blow smoke. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, I appreciate you so much. And that's one of the things I really learned from you was that you got to get up. You got to make the schedule. You got to hit your appointments. And so, and it's funny, like the album's out now, but back then I didn't know it, but I take it with me now is that, you know, it's, I think it's 2 Chainz that the play don't care who make it. Like that line to me, I don't know if that was his line, if he got that from somewhere, but like the play don't care who make it. If you prepare to hit that spot, if you prepare to get there, you'll get there. And so being a parent, going to work, coming home, studying whatever that may look like, or you know, writing the assignment, whatever that may look like, having my daughter on the days that I have her, because again, we're co-parenting, it really was like, okay, look, these days your daughter's gonna be with you, and I get overnight visits, and that's like you were saying, like father's rights is a big thing, because when you're not married and you are a father, there are certain rights that just are not to you. You have to actually petition for those types of rights, you know. So father's rights and overnight, like visiting, is one of them. It's mostly for at the behest of the mom in Illinois. It was not tough once I scheduled everything properly. So again, the nights I had my daughter, I could get a homework assignment, but it wasn't really getting done because I was feeding my daughter. We were watching either Blue's Clues. We were trying to put puzzles together. Exactly. You know, it's like we were trying to put puzzles together. I have videos of, like, her mom would come over and it would be like an hour duty to just, you know, play with our daughter or to get our daughter involved and interact with her surroundings. I still have it on my phone. It's like her first few steps in the apartment. It's her mother and I coaching her along and everything and saying, come on, you can do it. Fast forward to when she's now, of course, running into everything and just doing backflips off the couch. You know, those things were established because, you know, she knew that this was a place that was safe.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing to me about going to grad school and co-parenting was, regardless of what happens in school, my daughter's going to know it's a safe thing to be around. Now, the byproduct of that is there's like brilliant minds all around on a campus. And I would just ask people what they thought about like parenting, you know. Our professors that are parents, by adoption, parents by, say, childbirth, but just parents. Like, how do y'all do it? And those were stories, you know, I just got a lot of personal stories about, look, you're going to make mistakes, or, hey, this is the mistake I made. Don't ever do this.
Right.
And most of it was always around this one thing is, Lerone, this world is going to tell you that as a man, you need to be at work. But as a parent, as a father, you need to be around your child. You know, we're not saying just don't go to work, of course, but understand that heteropatriarchy has destined the male body to be absent from the family home or absent from the family structure, sure, but provide service outside so that all, you know, the bring home the bacon motif comes into play.
Yeah.
That your main role is to only work till you're dead. That's why, like, Cats in the Cradle is a great example, because what that song is doing is explaining how the boy's father felt like he was a dad because he went to work all the time.
Right.
But throughout the entire song, i.e. the child's, you know, adolescence phase and growing up,
child's like, where you at?
Exactly. Dad's like, yo, you know, it's cool. Like, if you could just sit here and chill with me. So there are times, you know, where I had free time, or say it wasn't my weekend with my daughter, and I would do my work, yes, but then I would text her mom, like, hey, can I see the baby today? You know, what are y'all doing? And you know, one thing that we always did was, as co-parenting, we would always go on walks. So, like, I would get home from school on a Tuesday, you know, or I'm sorry, right before I went to school, because it was mostly nights. I would always go to my daughter's mother's place, and we'd just walk around in the park and talk to each other. Okay, you know, what does the baby need? And this is what happened with me. And, this, you know, keeping that communication open. In grad school, I made my time work for me. And I wasn't just grasping at straws. So that was the biggest thing, the most important thing. And it's something I still keep with me today. Even though, like, I'm out of grad school, I still keep that schedule of whatever I'm doing. One of the days that I have my daughter, it has to all stop at a certain time, because that's the time for me to grow and bond with her.
Right.
And it's hard to explain sometimes to people who aren't in that situation. that, yeah, you know what? I didn't attend that function, even that rally, you know, with a lot of events that go on in Chicago. I didn't attend it because it was more important to me to watch what her favorite show
watch
now.
Blue's Clues, yeah. My daughter.
Well, yeah, it's like that's real. We're getting into Doc McStuffins, so like she's definitely she's getting heavy into Doc McStuffins, you know. But I'm still like the crazy dad, so we were watching like Fangbone on Netflix, you know, like it was a cartoon, but it was just more important that she and I had that interaction.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and that's, like I said, you know, I can't explain that to somebody. It just has to be something you experience. But there is something in your life, and I hope so, that you appreciate and love and care for so much, everything else takes a back seat.
But yeah. I don't want to get too far away from this, because this is
exactly
how I think fatherhood should be. But you mentioned a lot about gender roles in parenting.
Right.
And so I wanted to get into what's problematic about that, which you kind of touched on, but also how that's changed over the years, if it has. Yeah. Maybe how you were kind of raised, maybe how you raised Riel, especially with the framework and the education you have. And I also want to reference that Chris Rock stand-up, where he's talking about, you know,
tell your mama, tell your mama, tell your mama, nobody ever tells daddy shit. I'm talking about the real daddy that handled the fucking business. Nobody ever says, hey, daddy, thanks for knocking out this rent. Hey, daddy, I sure love this hot water. Hey, daddy, this is easy to read with all this light. Nobody give a fuck about daddy. I'm talking about daddy that handled his business. Nobody give a fuck about daddy. Think about everything that the real daddy does. Pay the bills, buy the food, put a fucking roof over your head. Everything you could ever ask for.
And it's funny, but he kind of brings up the same problemization that you bring up with gender roles and parenting.
So, first and foremost, great comedian, shitty father. Great comedian, fucked up husband. If all you can be is a great comedian, but you fail, and he says this himself, because he's referencing his newest stand-up special, right?
On Netflix, yeah.
And he references it himself. He's like, I was a bad husband. And he talks about what he did wrong. Again, your job is not tied to your parenting. Your ability to purchase a mansion, to have all these things surrounding your children, means jack shit if when they get to the age of if they get to the age of awareness, they look over at you and say, where were you? Or you, one of the worst things to any parent, you let someone hurt me. You know, that's one of the worst things that you could ever really hear. And your only answer is, but didn't I keep the lights on? And that's part of that idea that consumes the minds of a lot of fathers. Of male fathers, cis male fathers, I would say, because that's where I'm speaking from, is that if I don't make enough money, if I don't do these certain things, I'm not really being a dad. And when you start to, when you ask people or you hear people say something like that, maybe ask them to write those things down, it tends to talk about providing financial gains or material gains. Like, if I don't go to work, we don't eat, the lights don't stay on, the blah, 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 blah. So although it's like, yeah, you saying you want to be identified as more than that, that's valid as hell. What you don't do is turn to the audience or turn to the mother and go, how come you don't appreciate what I do? Right. It's like, motherfucker, do you even understand what I do?
What's his name? Like Billy or like Tommy
Jr.? But it's those things. And again, this is like you said, from my understanding, from my life education, and then from my academic education. Like, that's what I was looking at. How do you break these structures? Because in my house, some of those gender roles were adhered to because, again, we're talking about, like, living within a dominant structure, and that structure has no concern about your humanity. So, i.e., dog whistle, white supremacy. When we talk about the nuclear family, which has been busted by scholars, activists, comedians, pundits alike,
right,
the nuclear family is but one example. The reason a nuclear family meaning one wife, well, a husband and wife, woman, man, and child within a single parenting or a single household, The reason that was feasible at that point was because it was meant to promote a sense of puritanical beliefs of parenting. Where it falls apart is when you start to see that even in that heyday of like where everybody goes back to the 50s, where like nothing ever went wrong thanks to Happy Days, it's like, well, one, there's a little thing called the Korean War. Two, there were these crazy uprisings about these poor folks who suddenly recognize that they're not seen as human. Not even suddenly, but they had held more agency than before in recognizing that they're human beings. So the migrations from the South going to LA, coming up to St. Louis, coming up to Chicago, folks were starting to say, no, you know what? We don't resemble that, but that's something we want. So when you're in this country that teaches you to be this one way, that just happens to lean itself towards, that happens to lean itself towards white male heteropatriarchy, meaning the nuclear family has no race. So the black nuclear family, we can say, even though speaking of problematic people, you know, I'm going to reference the Cosby Show, but just the characters at this point.
Sure.
Everybody loved that show because it represented how black families can achieve.
Right.
Well, yeah, okay, but you understand that even within non-Western cultures, the idea of just two people raising a child would be ridiculous. And to take it back to why the doula was not, you know, like I loved our doula, but my daughter's mom's side, they come from a beautiful place called Jamaica. And within Jamaican culture and Jamaican history, they ain't no need for no damn doulas. The elders take care of the baby. The elders take care of the new mom because that's a rite of passage. So in my American way of thinking about like the dynamics, I was interrupting that. I didn't really catch that until it was too late, right? Yeah. Now, and not to go on the side to that, but to get back to this whole idea of like when you parent and how you parent and what you do, that nuclear family gets disrupted when people start to say, I don't want to be like that, or this doesn't work for me. So the excuses are now like, well, you all didn't do it the right way because you didn't get married. And we're like, no, actually, we're co-parenting. Like, this is the way that you're supposed to do it. We talk to each other. We communicate. Our marital status has no effect on our parenting status. My financial status should have no effect on my parenting ability. So when Chris Rock makes that joke, I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. It's funny. But instead of trying to blame the failure of the nuclear family for his mistakes, meaning if he wasn't cheating all the damn time, right, if he actually listened to his partner, maybe he wouldn't be divorced. Instead of going that way, why don't you take it the other way and go, okay, you know what? This way doesn't work for us. So why don't we discuss other parameters? Like communal child rearing is a thing. It takes a village, isn't just snatched out of the air. Right. You know, there's a reason that proverb still comes true. It still matters. It takes a village. It takes a community for a child to understand the rights and the wrongs and do's and the don'ts. It's funny, but it's like, yo, you as a father has nothing to do with the house that you provide. Because even in that comedy thing, he goes back and is like, well, I'm doing a competition. Y'all should see my Instagram. Ha, ha, ha. I really hear an insecure man who is afraid to lose the financial stronghold that he thinks manhood offers him as a father. Because again, I'm broke as shit, but I know my daughter loves me because she sees me as often as I can. And by as often, I don't mean like once a week. I mean, we see each other. We have activities. I make sure to get that FaceTime in. And again, not because I don't want to see her on the pole, quote unquote, but because it's just imperative that you show yourself and you give yourself to your child. Yeah. And don't worry so much about how much you're making, because again, you can make all the money in the world, but if your child doesn't see you, your child doesn't have that development with you, they're gonna let you know. And an absence is one of the big things. If you were absent over drug use or absent over incarceration, guess what? Being absent and your only advantage is, well, we made money, that doesn't sit with a child. That doesn't sit well with a kid. So in order to unlearn that, you must first divest from that understanding. Like, if you want to be a better parent, maybe not brag about how much money you're making. Be a better parent by talking to your child. Most importantly, communicating with your the mother of the parent or the co-parent themselves. So it's like, yeah, if you want to feel like the father gets more of this or that, then do things outside of the expectation. And by the way, no one gives a fuck about what the father thinks. Not because no one cares about men, but because we as male-bodied individuals are offered so many other choices and advantages. And so when you go in and say, well, here's a realm in which I can't dominate, something's wrong with that. It's like you're tone deaf. You're tone deaf to the actual message. And it shouldn't be that way, but motherhood is like one of those sections where a woman becomes autonomous almost and untouchable, and you can't say anything because she's a mother. But it's like it's only because it's in service to a man becoming a bigger man because they procreated. Right. Even though like the man hasn't, you know, yeah. the woman has sacrificed her body to create a child.
Is that all in conversation with the idea of like men like taking care of their kids and doing like do what you're supposed to as a father, and it being like a thing to be praised about? It's like, oh, you're like, you took your kids to the movies and you showed up and then you did this and the other, especially in like looking at the black male Milo and that, yeah, and the stigmatization that you get as a black male as far as not opting out or not
right
being
right.
absent father, which is, you know, it's mythical obviously, but it's still stereotyping, that's still like very real in some with some people.
Well, yeah, I think so the like just show up and like the like do what you're supposed to.
Right? Carry my kids. You're exactly. supposed to.
One of the biggest things that I can't stand is that. Like I say it all the time. Like some people give me praise for being a father, and I'm like, but I ain't really. I ain't like. I'm just doing. Like I'm gonna say I'm doing the bare minimum because that's horrible. But it's like I always say it like this. Look, right now my daughter speaks two languages. Now, but here's the thing. One of the languages is not in Western eyes looked at as even a language at all, or as a respected language. Again, my daughter's lineage is Jamaican American on her mother's side, African American on her dad's side. So in her mom's house and in her cultural understandings, Patois is the formal language. And again, like for a little history note, people who understand real history, just like how you were saying earlier, like you feel like that empathic bond with your mom. Mothers teach history. Like history follows the women of the culture. The pass down of history was given from woman to woman, but we've bastardized to think that it's only recipes and it's only, you know, it's only cleaning techniques or it's only ways to, you know, satisfy the male. It's like, no, actual history is passed down between the women of the culture. Because it is the women that are the recorders. They are the observers. They are the doers outside of Western culture. Yeah. So for all intents and purposes, I always say my daughter's Jamaican. Not because I discredit or I want her to disown the part of her that's, you know, as American as well as Jamaican. But it's like, no, my daughter's cultural understanding of this world will be seen through her mother's eyes. Because no matter how close I get with my... I mean, it's just for all of us, no matter how close we get, unless there's something there, we tend to learn these things from our mom because, again, within the Western understanding of child rearing, it's the mother's responsibility to raise the child. And then somewhere along that, if the child is a boy, the father takes them away and goes, okay, enough of that soft shit that's emotional understanding. Now you learn how to be a man.
Right.
So it's like we always have that deeper connection with it's possible to have that deeper connection with your mother. Because that's how you learn your history. That's how you find out about yourself, right? To fast forward to what am I doing? I'm raising my daughter. My daughter speaks two languages. She speaks English. She speaks Patois. After that, she's a child. You know, she jumps around. She has fun. We feed her sugar. We feed her gluten. She loves pizza. She loves fruit snacks. She drinks water. Don't get me wrong, and she eats fruit and everything, but it's like people praise this, and for me it's like looking at it from a lack because I don't feel like I'm doing something substantially amazing. Right. But the optics of me as a black male body figure spending time with my daughter at a park or just walking with her hand in hand, we've been so conditioned to starve ourselves out from that, or thinking that that just doesn't exist, that people break it up to high praise. Right. And it's like, it's the closest, honestly, as a black male father, it's the closest I'll get to feeling white mediocrity being praised.
Mm, yeah, that's
right. Because like we understand in this room that white mediocrity gets the highest of praises, navel gazing, because this country understands like that's what you want. When people want to praise me or tell, oh my God, you're amazing, blah, 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 I'm like, for what? Oh, you're in your daughter's life, and you're like, she's a baby, one. And two, like, where the F am I going to go? Like, if I have to leave and go somewhere, it's going to be because, like, things are just either all the way bad, or I've spoken with her mother and there's an opportunity for me to do something special. I'm not doing anything, like, out there. Yes, I want to be a responsible father, but like you're saying, it speaks to a deeper conversation and a deeper need to, again, get away from what we idolize and as proper or correct or normal or right. Because when you take down white supremacy, you take down whiteness, you start to look at all those things that you want as far as equality, and it's hard for you to deny, not you, it's hard for some people to deny, they're really chasing white supremacy, hoping that they can shade it their particular color. Because that's the dominant, that's why it's white supremacy. It's effective because everything is catered to that. So if you can in any way take hold of those power and privileges of white supremacy in your own structure, you'll do it. So there are people who praise themselves for being black fathers. I have a feeling about that. It's like, yo, you're not doing anything special. It's great. Show up. Keep doing it. Stop looking for someone to pat you on the back. There are people that praise themselves for staying married. Oh, we're 25 years, 35 years in. But when you look into the marriage, first off, unfortunately, the kids will always be the barometers of what's going on. You may also find out like these folks have never loved each other since the fifth year of marriage, and they're celebrating their 35th anniversary. You find out those truths about, again, that golden age or that nuclear family, that once they got into it and they had the picture on the wall, no one had an idea of what it actually meant to sustain that. Yeah. So they learn as they go. As a person, I'm being honest, like I'm learning as I go. I've made mistakes. Her mother and I have been upset with each other. Her mother and I have been cool with each other. I'm not trying to gain praise for simply being in my daughter's life and taking on the path that I chose, which was to be a father. If my daughter's speaking 7 different languages, and I mean, shout out to Marley Diaz, reading like 200 books a month or whatever. It was like, you know, she's just a voracious reader. And it's like, that's a special skill. That takes nurturing and promotion. Yes, you know, my daughter loves to read. Her favorite book now is Mufaro's Beautiful Daughters. I'm going to read to my daughter. I'm going to spend time with her. But until I can look back and go, you know what? That was some exceptional shit right there. Like, I don't need the praise, because we're not meant to be failures. We're not failures. We as fathers of color, period, as parents of color, we're not failures. And the moment we start comparing ourselves to what this westernized idea of successful family looks like, you tend to have more fun with your kids. And even for me, the hardest thing is to turn off what I feel is like that gaze upon me of, am I doing this right? Am I doing this right? Am I being an active father? Like, I have to wash that shit away because it's overwhelming. And it's debilitating. Like, well, damn, if I'm not doing this the right way, then what am I doing? So, yeah, that's my big thing, man, is you have to stop chasing the white rabbit, so to speak. Like, if you and the parent, or if y'all both are together, great, beautiful. I'm not saying divorce because you want to break down white supremacy or patriarchy. Right. No, not saying divorce.
Always do that.
Exactly. To get down. But it's like, realize that being praised for being active in your child's life is indicative of what society tells people about your presence or about who you are. So instead of making the joke about, oh, my kids, this and that, and how come I don't get any credit, instead of praising about, oh, you're active in life, why don't we all start collectively changing the narrative and say, that joke or that show that made the black dad so absent-minded that it was funny, it really isn't funny. And I don't want that representation there. So when they shoot back, well, what do you call this? And it's like the, what about black on black crime? What about the, you know, the high rate of fathers leaving the mothers? Like, actually, it's just unmarried. You don't have to be married to have a child. You don't have to, like, that's one way. So how about you actually expand your understanding of child wearing and even of consent, and realize that not everybody follows the same rules? Because I'm about to get real Northern and Southern cradle in here about, again, the Victorian understanding of parenting, which was the father goes out of the house, the mother tends to the house, the father comes back with food, versus Southern cradle, which within African nations and communities, it was a communal effort. Not just men hunted. If the tribe was hunting, if the tribe was active, people had designated spots. It was everyone's responsibility to make sure the children were safe and were fed. And that's where the struggle is, I think, in Western culture. It's like when people just don't want Western culture, but they don't adapt to it, they die. They have to sacrifice their own beliefs. Yeah. And there are a lot more people nowadays that are like, no, I'm not sacrificing shit. And if you have an issue with it, then take it up with me. Don't go into your voting booths. You know, don't criminalize my child for playing in a park. Right. So, yeah, that's where I stand with it. I feel like I was way long with it, and I'm very like.
No, I think
I was long with
no,
it.
No, hell no. That's exactly what, like, we needed to hear. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you know, like Lerone, like, we know who you are, we know where you come from, and like, you're a fantastic individual, and this isn't just praising you for being a dad. It's like, just, it's you who you are, and that's characteristics that you embody, and your seed will follow because you're given that. You feel what I'm saying? It's like,
no, I appreciate that.
And and that's where it's at. And I think it's like, it's a very unique story, and I think that it oftentimes helps. You know, sometimes, like, you know, once again, Colin and I don't have kids. Colin actually might have kids. We don't know.
Why do you keep saying that?
I have a feeling he might have kids. I feel somewhere he might have a child.
Oh my God.
No, I'm just kidding. No, but like we can attest to certain things. Just like we can attest to motherhood, fatherhood. You've been dealing with it in the manner that you have. And sometimes it takes either people like yourself who are already fathers and being like, yo, like, you know, maybe I'm 10 years in the game, 15 years in the game. It's like, You can still do something about it. Make an influence in your child's life. The goal is that you do it right. The goal is that, you know, from the get-go, you know, you take into consideration what is important and what is not. And so, you know, unfortunately, you know, stereotypes, I've always said, stereotypes are simply incomplete truths. You know, they're like, they're simply just one side
right
to it. But you doing what you've been doing, and then congratulations, you know, you graduated from DePaul's master's program, and then you're still with your baby girl, and you're still able to do that, and you're still able to grow, and you're still able to progress, and like, that's what we all need to understand. That is a possibility, is a reality for everyone, because that's why it's important, right? We change the future through the youth, and you're doing so with your own thing.
Thank you. Jesus.
No, I mean, it's yours, not mine. So thank you. Because I got no influence on that unless she listens to Bourbon and Brown Town. Yeah, then I guess. Yeah,
she's definitely going to be like a college podcast for her.
How is your father? How is his parenting?
Exactly.
Then you're going to hear in about 20 years. But Lerone, man, thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
That's cool.
It was so great. Happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you to all the fathers out there.
Father's Day, Dad.
All of you, everyone.
Happy Father's Day to my dad too, named Lerone. And happy Father's Day to my older brother, named Lerone.
My dad's Alfonso. I'm Alfonso. It works.
Ernesto.
No, it's Ernesto. But as always, from Bourbon and Brown Town, stay black, stay brown, stay queer.
Stay tuned and stay turned.
Alright, so we out here. They gotta make sure you take out your shit. Where's it at again?
It ain't nowhere yet. No. But Elevated Podcast, it's coming out the end of May.
So check it out. It'll be out
there. And thank y'all for listening.
Father's Day. We love you, all the dads out there.
Deuces.
Nobody give a fuck about dad. Papa was a
For more information on episode guests, related media, and topics, check out the episode notes. Follow us on social media at SoapboxPO and or visit SoapboxPO.com/podcast.